More than one female is killed every week in Australia by someone she knows. Anima was just 19 years old, pregnant and trapped in a controlling, isolating relationship. What looked like love from the outside was something far more dangerous behind closed doors. Because Miraj Zafar didn't just turn love into fear, he carried out a calculated, chilling crime that would shock all of Australia. Hi, I'm Nat, and this is The Midnight Files. Welcome to True Crime Tuesdays, where we give a voice to those who can no longer speak, shine a light on the truth, and hold those responsible accountable. Please take into consideration that today's video does talk about domestic violence resulting in a homicide. If you find this distressing, then please skip this episode. If this story resonates with you, or if you or someone you know is experiencing domestic abuse, I've included some support resources in the show notes for Australia below. To understand what's happened in this case, we need to begin with Amina Hayat. In 2022, Amina was just 19 years old living in Sydney, Australia, surrounded by her friends and family. She attended Tempe High School, where she excelled academically, achieving an ATAR above 95 in 2021. 95 ATAR is literally amazing. That just shows how smart she was and how dedicated she was in her study throughout all of her last year of high school, basically leaving the door open for her to get into any degree that she wanted. And because she got that incredible result that allowed her to pursue her dream of studying medicine at university. Amina was in her second year at Western Sydney University studying to become a doctor. She was really enjoying herself and how her future looked as she loved helping others. Those that knew her would describe her as intelligent, driven, compassionate, and deeply loved by her friends and family. She was just a teenager, just trying to find her way in life. Like most girls her age, she loved shopping, clothes, movies, music, driving around with friends, taking photos. It even said that she loves iced coffee and sushi. I know I can definitely relate with her on that one. She just loved making the most out of every day. Amina was born into a Bangladeshi Australian family. Her father immigrated to Australia first in 2006, followed by her mother and Amina when she was just 9 years old. And Amina's younger sister was born in Australia. Her dad said that Amina assimilated really well into Australian culture, became fluent in English very quickly, and enjoyed Western food and really enjoyed what Australia had to offer. Her parents worked incredibly hard to give her and her sister a stable, loving household filled with opportunities. Her father, Abu Hayat, was especially protective of her and wanting the best education for her and her sister. Amina had a close relationship with her family and would take her parents out for food at least once a week. Her parents said that she just really wanted to help people and everything in her life reflected that. But like many young people, Amina was also searching for love, searching for connection, for someone to share her life with. And that's where Miraj Zafar enters the picture. It's said that maybe she knew him as early as year 10 in high school, but things didn't actually become serious between the two and they started to spend more time together, just the two of them. And then in 2021, in her final year of high school, they entered into a relationship together. In 2022, at the time of the incident, Miraj Zafar was 20 years old, living in North Parramatta, and was a apprentice builder. Zafar was born in Sydney in 2001 in Lakemba to a Pakistani-Australian family. His father had emigrated from Sialkot in Pakistan, sorry if I pronounced that wrong, and the family had settled in Greenacre. He attended Malek Fahd Islamic School until 2011 in Greenacre, Western Sydney, then moved to Belmore Boys High School in 2012, where he repeated year 11 and never finished the HSC. By the way, for people not from Australia, I don't know if it's called something different, but that's basically just your high school certificate, which just proves that you've completed and finished high school. Zafar in school, according to his peers, didn't listen or seem very interested in studying and was said to make a lot of jokes in class, and most of them at the expense of the teachers. One of his old classmates saw a recent photo of him in 2022 and remarked that Miraj looked muscular and composed, and this pumped up gym body, he now looked unrecognizable to him from the person that he had attended school with. But beyond these basic details, a very different picture begins to emerge. Zafar Jafar had a very different reputation. Unlike Anima, who was known for her kindness, ambition, Jafar was secretive, controlling, and manipulative. Those who knew him said that he had a short temper and a tendency to dominate the people around him. But of course, that's not how he presented himself to her at first. He came across as charming, attentive, affectionate. He made big grand promises, told her what she wanted to hear, convinced her that he was the man that she should be with and that she could trust him. Anima had never been in a relationship prior to being with Jafar, and without anything to compare it to, what felt intense may have felt like love, but what she was experiencing wasn't love, it was control. Like in many coercive relationships, it often begins with what's often described as love bombing. And at this stage, she didn't have any reason to second guess his intentions. She took the overwhelming attention, affection, and reassurance he was giving her at face value and was sucked into this relationship with him. But this facade would slowly start to slip and his true nature would come out. He began to isolate her from her friends and family. He pulled her away from a life that she had once had. On May 31st, 2021, Amina called a friend at 2:20 a.m., distressed, and asked if she could come and stay the night at her house. Amina goes to her friend's house, and when she gets there, she's crying. And her friend is trying to console her and see what's wrong, and when she's looking at Amina, she can see that she has bruises on her throat, finger and thumb marks around the left side of her neck, as well as bruising on her chest, arm, wrist, and thigh. She told her friend that she had gotten into an argument with Jafar and he had hit and grabbed her. Amina ended up going to another friend's house and also telling them that he had put his hands around her neck and had strangled her until she became unconscious. Both of her friends could see the marks on her neck and they were both very concerned. It's thought that Jafar did this and he became so enraged and attacked her because he had mistakenly seen Amina walking with another man, which didn't actually happen. And instead of having a rational conversation about it, he just attacked her. Also at the same time, if she was walking with a man, that's not cheating. She could be walking with a friend. She could be walking with her dad. Like, who knows who she could be walking with? She could be babysitting someone for all he knows. You don't just attack someone. After this incident, Amina had taken out a apprehended violence order, an AVO, against Jafar at the Campsie Police Station in Sydney. They were still very early on in their relationship, and for something to result in an AVO, it's seriously a really concerning sign, and I can only imagine what Amina must have been thinking at this point. Unfortunately though, Amina would go back to Jafar after this, and it seems as though she withdrew the AVO. And I guess we could all might be thinking, why did she go back to him? I think it is a question that people often ask, but in relationships like this, it's rarely that simple. There's often a cycle, moments of fear followed by apologies, promises, and I'll change, it will all be different, I would never do that to you again. And by the time you realize something isn't right, leaving can feel almost impossible. Amina's dad had already begun to see warning signs and he tried to step in. On the 8th of October 2021, Jafar approached Amina's mother and sister from outside their home. He had never met them before and they were not known to him, so they felt very shocked that this man was just coming up to speak to them out the front of their home. And you can imagine what they were thinking also, because they'd never met him before. Their daughter's in a relationship with this man and her daughter had taken an AVO out against him and then she had gotten back with him after that. After Jafar approached Amina's mother and sister in the street, her father arrived home shortly after that and Jafar told him he wanted to marry Amina. Then what followed after that was a confrontation in the street and a family friend intervened, taking Amina and Jafar inside her apartment to talk, to try and de-escalate the situation. But Amina's parents were clear and they wanted to at least meet his family properly first before discussing any type of marriage. Not to mention, they'd only been dating at this stage for a couple of months. and they were only 19 and 20 years old. Unfortunately, Zavar just refused for the families to meet up. He wouldn't let his parents meet her parents. So that was off the cards. I don't know why he refused that, but he did. And later that evening, he called Abu Hayat, Amina's father, to have another conversation about it. And that ended up escalating again. And the call quickly turned really aggressive. And during that conversation, Zafar ended up threatening Amina's dad, saying that he would kill him. It's just kind of odd that Zafar wants to get Amina's dad's permission to marry her, because it doesn't really seem like he actually respects and cares for Amina that much. And also, if he's not even getting his own family involved, why does he care so much about getting Amina's father's approval? Following that threat on the phone where he threatened to kill him, her father went to the police, and the following day, a provisional apprehended violence order, another AVO, was issued against Zafar for the protection of Abu Hayat. So now he's gotten two AVOs taken out against him within just a few months. Very, very concerning. And then something shifted. The same day, Amina calls her father and tells him that she wants to marry Zafar, regardless of how her family are feeling. And then over the next few days, she returns home to collect her belongings. And after that, it's so sad. Her parents would not see or speak to her again for the rest of her life. Their relationship escalated quickly, and just after five to six months of dating, on October 13th, 2021, they had entered into a private Islamic marriage without the knowledge or support of their families, a decision that would later become a source of immense regret for Amina. Only a few weeks after being married, Amina fell pregnant. Amina, who was once so close with her parents, now no longer saw or spoke to them, and the newly married couple moved into an apartment in North Parramatta on October 14th. It didn't take long for the manipulation and the control to begin again. Zafar became increasingly possessive. He had isolated Amina from her family and now was discouraging her from seeing her friends. He was slowly tightening his grip on her life. She became increasingly withdrawn, and her family were just so concerned about her. They commented just before they lost contact with her that she wasn't the happy, lively, sociable teenager that she had once been. Neighbors in the North Parramatta apartment said they heard muffled sounds of arguing coming from Zafar and Amina's apartment at least once a fortnight since they moved in. The abuse was only escalating, and in late November 2021, Amina had sent a photo to a friend of herself that showed her left cheek was red and swollen. She had told her friends that he would slap, punch, and kick her, even treating her like a slave. She wanted out of the marriage, but she knew it would take time and was worried he would try and kill her or her family if he found out that she wanted a divorce. Throughout 2021, Zafar would often abuse her, but she never reported this violence to the police once she was married. Police later analyzed Zafar's mobile phone, uncovering a series of messages exchanged between the two from mid-December 2021 until January 2022. And what those messages revealed was deeply disturbing. Anima's text spoke of escalating violence, being bashed, choked, and living in fear. She referenced her pregnancy, said that she wanted to end the relationship, and she even told him she was going to go to the police. She asked for a divorce. In one message she wrote, "I just don't want to say this to your face because I'm scared that you're going to bash me again." In another she told him, "I don't want a son like you. I can't have your children." His responses showed a very different tone, dismissive, controlling, minimizing what had happened, saying, "Baby, you need to let go of the past. Whatever I did was not me at all." But the messages didn't just reveal manipulation, they exposed control over every part of her life. He told her to answer his calls or she wouldn't be allowed to go out, said he wouldn't let her go to work, and repeatedly told her she did not have permission to leave the house. At one point, he even called her a dumb bitch. In another instance, when she also brought up the fact that she was concerned about having children with him and them turning out to be like him, he said that they would have many sons and they would be just like him. On the 8th of December, 2021, Anima had reached out to one of Zafar's friends and asked them to contact a friend of theirs for her. This female friend of Zafar had pictures of him on her Instagram for some reason, and she'd asked her to have these photos removed of him from her Instagram because it upset her. I mean, it's just bizarre. He's so controlling over every aspect of her life. She can't leave the apartment. She can't go to work. She can't do anything without his permission. And, you know, and he attacks her for just supposedly walking with another male, even though that supposedly didn't actually happen. But then he's allowed to go and be in photos with other females on their Instagrams. Like, it's like, what is he doing? Apparently, she also confided in this friend when asking to remove these pictures that she wanted to leave him and get a divorce. She told them that he would yell at her and was becoming more and more aggressive. In early January 2022, Anima was really upset and called her maternal uncle who lived in New York. She also had apparently confided in him about how violent Zafar had been towards her. And then just 2 weeks later, on January 29, 2022, Anima confided in friends, telling them that she was afraid and that she regretted marrying him. She sent in texts to her friends, "I have nobody except you." And the friends replied, "You have got no choice. You have to stay with him." Like, I just don't understand how you could say that to anyone, let alone a friend reaching out to you and asking for help, who you know is being abused and is being isolated away from everyone and is clearly fearing for their own life. I mean, after everything that happened, I'm sure that those friends regretted saying things like that, because I would deeply, truly regret saying something as cold as that to someone. She sent one final message to that friend at 9:10 p.m. saying, "I hate him." And the next day, she was dead. At 5 p.m. on the 29th of January, Zafar had gotten home from work and had told Anima that he had made plans to go and hang out with a friend. But he then later ended up telling that friend that he got into an argument with Anima, and it turned out like he wouldn't be going to hang out with them after all. And then he later left the apartment at 7:52 p.m. after the argument. Anima herself ended up calling a friend at 8:12 p.m. and told them that she regretted marrying him and was really upset. And then just 3 minutes later, after she made that phone call, Zafar came back into the apartment at 8:15 p.m. And then at 8:30 was when Anima sent those messages to a friend saying that she has no one but you. And that final message at 9:15 that she sent to her friend saying that she hated him. This was the last contact that she would ever have with anyone. Anima's friend would continue to message her for the next several days, waiting for a reply to come through from Anima, but it never did. Zafar left the apartment block again at 9:55 p.m. So it is suspected that he killed Anima between 9:10 p.m. when she sent her last text message and 9:55 p.m. when he left the apartment. Zafar messaged a friend a minute after leaving the apartment saying that he was going to come pick them up and they can go for a drive together. And on that 35-minute drive out to pick up his friend from their house, he told that friend that his wife had scratched him, and Zafar and the friend both came to this mutual agreement that his relationship with Anima is toxic. When he arrived to pick up his friend, the friend noticed the scratch marks, and they both drove around until 12:20 a.m. until he ended up dropping his friend back at their house. Zafar ended up returning back to his apartment, but again, he didn't stay there for very long, and about 20 minutes later, he left, and this time he was carrying what appeared to be clothes and bedding. Hours later, he ended up returning back to the apartment at 6 a.m. carrying back in the same items that he had left with. Like, I just seriously can't understand, after everything that just happened, he thought, well, I better go hang out with a friend and vent to them about how bad my relationship is and how toxic it is. You literally just killed your partner. There is no longer a relationship. Like, you're a grown man saying to your friend, "She scratched me," and then agreeing it's toxic, but you just killed your pregnant wife and you want the sympathy? He's the one that has isolated her, controlled her, abused her. It's not this like mutual conflict he's trying to make out like it is to his friend. Like, they just got in a bit of a tiff. She was left to feel like that no one cared, thought that she didn't have a support system anymore, can't get out, and when she tries to leave and builds up the courage to do it, he ends up killing her. The next day, on the 30th of January, at 11:30 a.m., Zafar sent a text to his mom asking if they can meet up as he needs to tell her something. He arrived at his parents' house around 11:45 a.m. and took his mother down to the local park. His mom noticed that Zafar had scratches and bruises on his neck and arms. Zafar started to cry and he had told his mother that they had a fight and that Anima had lost consciousness during the fight. I think he must have kind of like made out like that she was still alive, just like unresponsive at their apartment or something. He didn't want his mom to do anything. He was just telling her and then dropped her back home after that chat. Later that day, he called his mom again around 4:30 p.m. and told her that Anima wasn't breathing. And Zafar's mom was shocked and very concerned, asking him to call an ambulance, you know, call for help. He replied back to his mom, "I'm not going to call the ambulance. I'm scared. The police will get me and put me in jail." Like, well, no shit, Sherlock. Like, what do you think will happen, for goodness sake? His mom said, "No, you have to call an ambulance." And again, he said, "I don't want to go to jail." Well, you know, like, he's not so tough anymore, is he? He's all concerned. You know, what do you think happens when you kill someone? You go to jail. He asked his mom how much a ticket would be to go overseas, so he was going to try and run. I don't know what he was expecting from his mother to like side with him and agree that he hadn't done anything wrong. I mean, I kind of think he thought that she wouldn't tell anyone. I think his mom was pretty shocked, and to know like that your child had been so violent towards someone and to just leave them without calling for help. So I think we can all really thank Zafar's mom for going with her intuition of something's not right and calling the police. She called the police around 4:32 p.m. on the 30th. Then at 4:36 p.m., police arrived to the apartment in North Parramatta, where they had to force their way into the apartment because Zafar had just left the apartment a few minutes earlier. What happens next is both disturbing and calculated. Inside the apartment, officers observed a strong chemical smell, and they followed that smell to the bathroom, where they found Anima lying face down, naked in the bathtub, not moving or breathing. Police found 5 empty 20-liter bottles. I mean, 20 liters, that's more of a tub, isn't it? Like, that's huge. Of hydrochloric acid in the bathroom. She was covered in 100 liters of acid. I think she was like, from the report, seemed like she was almost like half floating in the acid in the bathtub. When she was found, there was brown liquid covering the lower half of her body. This acid didn't dissolve her body like he had intended it to, but it had disfigured her so greatly that she had to be identified using DNA. The agreed upon facts concluded in the Supreme Court that Zafar had attacked Anima by obstructing her breathing through applying compression to her neck and or smothering her. When he made out to his mum during the day that she was unresponsive at their apartment and he was crying and upset, but he had a plan all along and he tried to dissolve her body in acid. Security footage throughout that day shows him calmly walking into a Bunnings on the 30th of January at Westmead at 10:24 a.m. that he drove his work truck to, where he bought 20 liters of hydrochloric acid. He came back to his flat at 10:53 a.m., filled the bathtub with the acid and placed Amina's body in the bathtub in an attempt to dispose of her. He then went to meet up with his mother, cried about the argument he had with Amina, but then after that, he ended up going back to the flat to check on Amina in the bathtub, then went to Bunnings and Westmead again, looking calm, unfazed, where he bought 4 more 20-liter tubs of hydrochloric acid and then added them to the bath around 3:45 p.m. to try and decompose of her body and his unborn baby. In the afternoon again, he calls his mum to tell her that Armina has just stopped breathing and that he's upset and he doesn't want to go to jail and how much is a ticket out of Australia? But he's just such a liar because, you know, he's making out to his mum. It's just now that she's just stopped breathing, but really she's actually been dead for hours and he's made two separate trips throughout the day of also talking to his mum, not letting on that he has done this, that he's gone to Bunnings to buy acid to pour onto her. His actions with what he was doing versus what he was telling his mom are just not lining up, because on the 30th around 5 p.m. after he's just tried to dissolve his dead wife in a bathtub, he meets up with another friend and that friend notices that he appears very intoxicated and there's a bottle of alcohol next to him in his truck. The friend also can see that Safar has scratches around his neck. And during the conversation, Safar spoke about his marriage, saying that he had married Armina the year before, despite her parents not approving, and that he had married her to have kids. And then he ends up telling that friend that he had killed someone. Later that evening, around 8:30 p.m., Safar made a series of internet searches, including how many years do you get in Sydney for murder, along with earlier searches he made throughout the day, can hydrochloric acid burn through skin, Bunnings near me, and searches related to police and news coverage. It painted a very clear picture of what was going on and Safar's actions. At 9:45 p.m. he met up with another friend and the two spent the night driving around, stopping at different places to eat before Safar dropped him home around 3:30 in the morning. By the next day, the police were closing in. On January 31st, police contacted the owner of the truck Safar had used. That owner then reached out to him, telling him police were looking for him and that he needed to hand himself in. After a citywide manhunt lasting over 20 hours, at around 11 a.m., Safar contacted Parramatta Police Station, saying he knew he was wanted. And just over an hour later, at 12:20 p.m., he walked into the police station and surrendered himself. He was taken into custody and he reportedly said, "I don't want to do 20 years. I just made a mistake." I think our versions of mistakes are very different. The truck he had used was later seized from an underground car park at Bunnings in Greenacre. He initially denied responsibility, but as the evidence started mounting against him, he eventually pleaded guilty. During his sentencing in New South Wales Supreme Court in December 2024, Justice Deborah Sweeney stated that he acted with reckless indifference to life by either choking or smothering Anima. During the trial, Anima's father gave a heart-wrenching statement saying, "He burned the face I used to talk to and kiss every night. Can you imagine someone burning your child? I can never see her ever again."
Why you kill my daughter? What is the problem? Why kill my daughter?
Anima's mother, still grieving, said, "She had so many dreams, so much ahead of her. He took everything from her."
"My daughter not coming! My daughter not coming! Allah!"
The judge also said he acted in such a way because of his anger at the prospect of Miss Hayat leaving him and the end of the marriage, and the context of Miss Hayat being pregnant at the time. The judge went on to say this was against a background of controlling and violent behavior by the offender. The offense occurred in the home of Miss Hayat, where she is entitled to feel safe. The court did consider Safar's age being just 20 at the time of the offense, as well as his limited criminal history and difficult personal circumstances, including a lack of family support after his marriage. His legal team argued that his mental health, including depression and past substance use, reduced his responsibility. However, expert psychiatric evidence found that while he had experienced some depression and anxiety, he was not suffering from a major psychotic disorder or psychosis at the time of the offense. The judge ultimately ruled that these factors did not reduce the moral culpability. While Zafar expressed remorse and later pleaded guilty, the court noted that his apology was partly focused focused on the consequences for himself, taking into account his guilty plea, some prospects for rehabilitation, and the seriousness of the crime. The court emphasized the need for accountability and to uphold the dignity of Anima Hayat. The judge said that she considered these factors along with Safar's conduct in relation to her body and her death, and that he did not undertake any significant planning or organization in killing Ms. Hayat. We must vindicate the dignity of the victim, Ms. Hayat, and express the community's disapproval of the crime against her. I take into account that he was employed before he committed this offense, and he is accepting of his need for rehabilitation. She said, given his youth, his limited prior record, and that attitude, it seems he has positive prospects of rehabilitation. She did not believe his hallucinations he said he was having whilst in custody were genuine, but in a letter to the court, he took full responsibility. The judge assessed the offense as in the mid-range of seriousness for murder. He was sentenced to 21 and a half years in prison with a non-parole period of 16 years. This means that he will be eligible for parole in 2038. Her parents were inconsolable when the sentence was given. Their sobs and wails could be heard throughout the courtroom. Anima's story is a devastating example of domestic violence. When I was looking at pictures of Anima with her family versus pictures of her with Miraj, it's like two different people. In the pictures with her family, she looks effervescent, content. She looks happy, comfortable with her family, hugging, posing, smiling with them, joking around. And then in the pictures with Miraj, she looks like a shadow of herself, controlled, demurred. She looks more pale to me, like the life was just drained out of her. She's barely smiling, and if she is, it looks controlled and forced, like she can't be herself with him. Anima's life was full of potential. She had already overcome such adversity in assimilating into a new country, learning a new language. She was striving ahead in her academic life. She was winning at life prior to her relationship with Murad Zafar. She would have been a brilliant doctor, a loving daughter, a leader in her field. But because of one man's rage and control, her story ended far too soon. In Australia, domestic and family violence has historically resulted in the death of approximately one woman per week. However, recent data indicates an alarming increase in these incidents. In 2023, 58 women were victims of domestic homicide, up from 35 women in 2022 and 33 women in 2021. Shockingly, in 2024, 74 women were killed by domestic violence. Averaging more than one death per week, it's around one every 4 days. In 2025, as per Counting Dead Women Australia, around 54 women were killed from domestic violence. This trend underscores a growing crisis in Australia, emphasizing the urgent need for effective measures to combat domestic violence. In all of these cases I will be looking into, I strive to give it the justice it deserves, ensuring my accuracy to the best of my ability. Every episode is thoroughly researched and written by me using publicly available information. While I do my best to present the facts correctly, I sincerely apologize for any unintended inaccuracies. That's all for today. Thank you so much for watching or listening, however you've stumbled across this channel. Let me know what your thoughts are in the comments below, and I'll see you in the next one.